Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Bill Owens, I wanted to talk to you about your new Women's Advisory Committee. And I'm wondering why you did it, why you appointed such a group, and what you hope to get out of it.
What we are looking to do is, as we've done with the Farm Advisory Group, is to look at issues that are, if you will, defined, at least by the media, as women's issues, but also to make sure that we're getting input from women on the issue that really, if you will, drives almost everybody in my district, and of course that is the economic and jobs questions. We have many more women today who are CEOs running their own businesses, and we need to take advantage of that experience and to make sure that we're getting that kind of input on a regular basis. And so what we'll do is we will, on a regular basis, reach out, if you will. Sometimes it'll just be an email with an update saying, here's where something is we think may be of interest to you. And I'll tell you that I do this with a lot of people on a lot of issues. I'm frequently sending articles to people in the district about a wide variety of subjects and asking what their opinion is as I read something in the national press or sometimes in the local press. I think it's very important to get that continuous flow of information and to develop that dialogue.
You know, you just mentioned something that was interesting to me. 17%, I just heard on NPR, 17% of the CEOs of major corporations are women. How come so low, do you think?
Well, I think that that goes back a little bit to some of the conversations we've recently had about the role of women in society. I think it's an evolving issue, probably started during World War II, as women went into the workforce, as men went off to war. It continued really through the last century and I think is evolving further today. And I think that it's an important part of our overall evolution, and it recognizes people for their ability, not their gender.
But so many women are now running for public office more than ever. You have a lot of colleagues who are women. Do you think it makes a difference whether or not women are in the House?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because from my perspective, it is not whether someone is a man or a woman. It is what they bring to the table. And so I think the important thing is that in people's minds, when they make a judgment, they don't make a judgment, is this person a woman? And the same thing really goes for race questions. It's not a function. We should literally be, as the old symbol of justice, with justice being blind, our relationship should be blind in that sense as well. So we're making decisions based upon the quality of the idea and the quality of the person performing the work.
So we see things like women's caucuses in the House, and does that further what you've just been talking about? In other words, that we value people as individuals, or are there political reasons, sociological reasons, to do this that you find productive?
I think that there are, at least at the current time, sociological reasons that drive those caucus issues, if you will. But your hope is over time, in large measure, that that goes away. And that, again, people are judged based on the quality of ideas and the quality of the work they perform.
Well, as we know, there is a glass ceiling, and we know that women are generally paid less. Not as much so as it used to be, but still less than men get paid. I was very interested in your espousal of a minimum wage hike. So maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, the place where I come out on the minimum wage hike is it clearly is necessary. But at the same time, we have to be very careful about small businesses, which is where the president went in his State of the Union message, that we need to provide tax credits to small businesses so that you get that balance. All of that being said, if you look at what the minimum wage hike would do, it still, in most cases, does not bring people above the poverty level. So there has to be a wider array, if you will, of supports in place to accomplish that. And my belief is, from just a very pragmatic standpoint, that since 70% of the United States economy is consumer-driven, and people who are earning the least spend all of the dollars that they earn, every dollar you give to them is dollars that goes into consumption, which drives our economy. So this is a, I used to refer to this as the trickle-up theory. Reagan had the trickle-down theory. I think this is a trickle-up theory. The more money you give to the folks at the bottom, the more they're going to spend, the more you're going to drive the economy. And I think that that could have a beneficial across-the-board impact.
You know, that goes along with that. The number one place that most people have had their money and had that money appreciate in this country has been in housing. And we recently went through this housing bubble and some of the things that we saw with people getting their homes taken away. I've been thinking about that a lot, the idea that Franklin Roosevelt, a great Democrat, but he knew that people had to have some minimal thing in order to be good citizens, love the country. So I've been thinking that this business of foreclosure, which we've just gone through, is one of the most serious threats to democracy we've ever had.
It clearly is. And unfortunately, as that crisis was unfolding, I don't think we did a particularly good job of if you will, providing the banks with the tools they needed to really resolve the issue. And the banks didn't do a particularly good job either. And when I say banks, I'm talking about the big banks. You know, if you look at the community banks that exist in our communities, there were, percentage-wise, very little foreclosures because those folks worked with their borrowers to make sure that you didn't get these negative, horribly negative outcomes, whereas the big banks were much less concerned with that. And I don't think that we gave them the tools, and to the extent we gave them tools, they didn't use them very well. So there's, in my view, a lot of fault on the big banks in this arena.
Did the small community banks not sell their loans to secondary, you know, insurers? Or
in large measure, the small the community bank basically had their mortgages purchased by Freddie and Fannie, which is different than sending them into the secondary market.
Okay, very quickly, because we only got a couple of seconds left. I wonder how the farm bill is progressing.
Well, I think, and I tend to be an optimist on this, but my conversations with Colin Peterson, what I've recently read in a couple of media outlets, is that we're moving closer to a farm bill. I suspect if we get a budget deal that the farm bill may be included in that as well, because they'll need the additional savings. So, and it looks like it's heading for something that will be about $8 billion in food stamp cuts, not the $40 billion that the House passed.
But $8 billion is still a lot of money, isn't it?
It's a lot of money, and as Bernie Sanders said to me yesterday, if you're one of the people who loses food stamps, it's a big deal. And I agree with him, but this is one of those areas where we're trying to reach some kind of compromise, and as much as I agree with that, I also recognize the fact that there are other points of view here, and it's just another difficult decision we have to make.
Bill Owens, I love it when you come by and you talk to us, and appreciate it very much. When we come back the next time, it's going to be the lightning round. I'm going to ask you about a whole bunch of different things very quickly, okay?
Sounds like fun, Alan.